about changes to Outlook client that's going to be happening at the end of the month. So let's get started. The Federal Trade Commission, otherwise known as the FTC, recently published a new cybersecurity guide that was actually pretty darn good. Now, those of you that have been listening to the show for a while know that I'm really not a fan of government regulations because they oftentimes tend to be more damaging than helpful. There's not a lot that government does well because it's not intended to be efficient or lean. It's not intended to be profitable, and it's not intended to really be focusing on cutting waste. And that's why free enterprise, or I should say, you know, the competition market space tends to be much better at it. Now, I know there's those of you out there that would claim corruption. However, have you actually looked at the latest corruption associated with welfare benefits or Social Security benefits? So I think there's corruption all over the place. It's just part of the human condition. Nonetheless, there are some circumstances where it can be helpful if a governmental agency puts forth recommendations. And this is what the FTC has done. Now, about 15 years ago, the FTC used to do more in terms of protecting personally identifiable information, especially of consumers. They had some they had some publications that basically said, you know, if you handle PII, personally identifiable information, and that is oftentimes going to be your employees, right? You've got name, address, telephone number, social security number, probably the I-9 verification information as well on employees, which is probably going to be a photocopy of their driver's license or their passport, in some cases their social security card. You know, so that's really a ton of highly sensitive information. And as I said, about 15 years ago, the FTC used to have some more teeth in terms of their enforcement of their PII protection guidelines. And I don't know what happened, but that just seemed to have dried up and was replaced by this huge focus on Sarbanes-Oxley, GLBA, which is the Graham-Lilley-Bleach Act, which is for financial services organizations, of course, then HIPAA and PCI. So the government, by and large, has been focusing on these things that impact merchant card transactors, healthcare organizations, publicly traded companies, which is where Sarbanes-Oxley comes in, and then financial services organizations. And unfortunately, that has left this enormous hole, and I'm not kidding you, it's enormous, with all privately held companies. And notice I'm not talking about the size of the organization here. This is not exclusively a small and medium business issue. There are a lot of privately held companies out there that have 13,000 employees, which is not a small company. I mean, that's effectively the size of large enterprise. So there's nobody that could make a viable argument that says that an organization that has 13,000 employees doesn't have the resources to be able to protect adequately PII and really effectively do it the same way as a publicly traded organization does, right? So it seems as though maybe the FTC is kind of trying to get back in the game of providing guidance, and maybe they'll eventually put some enforcement teeth in it. And this is one of those areas where I think some enforcement is actually needed. And that's a big deal coming from me, because as I said, I don't think the government really does much of anything well. So what's it going to take, though, in order to get privately held companies of all shapes, sizes, and flavors to engage in what those of us in the cybersecurity industry would classify as adequate levels of protection. You know, we're not talking about what a lot of people would think is, you know, NSA level protections or DOD or, you know, the ubiquitous Fort Knox quotation, even though I think some of us have better security than Fort Knox. But nonetheless, there is still just, it's almost ubiquitous at this point. I'm just going to classify it as almost the ubiquitous level that privately held companies are not adhering to cybersecurity standards and best practices. That's pretty much what I see across the board. And a lot of that has to do with they just don't care, because this is not an issue of not having the resources. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been called into an organization to do an audit. I do the audit. I see this organization spending, oh, $150,000 a year on their marketing budget, just the marketing budget. But then you start talking to them about how, well, gee, they've basically done nothing with their information technology systems for the last, you know, 20 years, 16, you know, plus years. So they haven't spent any money on that. And of course, it's a complete catastrophe as a result. But they can manage to come up with 150 grand a year to spend on marketing. So, and I'm not saying that marketing isn't important. What I'm saying is that your marketing is going to be irrelevant when you're out of business because you get breached. And in too many of these cases, you know, obviously I'm not going to reveal confidential details, but I'm going to tell you that in too many of these cases, I literally see an active breach going on during the audit. I'd say it happens 85% of the time, which is a pretty ridiculously high number. So if there's an active breach going on, and then the owners of that company or the decision makers of that organization basically say, nah, you know, we can't come up with the money to fix the problem. But yet they've got 150 grand to blow on a marketing budget consistently every year. What that is basically telling you is a story that says that they just don't care. Right? They do not, they have the money, obviously. They just do not want to allocate it there. Now, I'm not going to cast aspersions on everyone because we certainly here at QPC work with a lot of clients that do put proper focus on cybersecurity. But I have to tell you that that is 99% of the time not an organizational-wide decision on behalf of the client. It is because there is someone internally in a leadership position or a level of influence position in that organization that does care. That's really the delineator here. So when we think about, you know, when I'm telling you from my last 25 years of experience in this industry, specifically in cybersecurity, looking at what is the delineating factor as to whether or not an organization takes cybersecurity seriously, and then actions that in an ongoing, continuous effort to try to get to the point where they have adequate security. Because adequate security is a moving target that changes every day, and it's just something you have to have eternal vigilance for. I'm serious. It's not, you don't get to like do a project and go, oh yeah, we're good. That's not the end of it. It's an eternal vigilance scenario. So the delineator that I see is whether or not there's somebody internally at that organization who is going to be the champion of that. And if the entire advocacy and prioritization of doing things good enough inside of an organization is based around the advocacy of that one individual, that is a problem. Because if that individual is either neutered in terms of they don't have influence anymore, maybe they're not supported because upper management changes and the new upper management doesn't support them effectively, you know, any number of things that can happen that way. So what I think needs to actually happen, because we've tried this whole thing from a perspective of saying, look, here's NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, and here are things like OWASP standards. Let's just, you know, pick on website standards for an example, you know, for a discussion point. You have very widely publicized, well-known, long-established, highly disseminated standards from OWASP and NIST that talk about this is what you need to do in order to secure a website. Yet, literally every single day of the week, I see fairly sizable organizations doing business with incompetent nimrods who specifically, and I'm very passionate about this because they're in the business of taking money from people saying, we do website development and we know how to secure things. But yet, what you actually see when you do an OWASP assessment of the website that they're supposed to be in charge of, what you end up seeing is massive compliance problems. When I say compliance problems, that website is not compliant with the standards, which leads to security issues, which leads to breaches. And you even see the internal controls of those website developer organizations being grossly, egregiously out of compliance with just common sense standards. I mean, I could tell you about many examples where I have firsthand experience where these web developer organizations will send credentials through email. I mean, my head wants to explode when I see them do this stuff. I'm like, what level, you know, where did you go to school to think that sending credentials for a public-facing website through email, unencrypted email, is an acceptable method of disseminating that information? I mean, it's crazy. And yet, these people are supposed to be professional web developers. So we can use that example as a microcosm, but really then pull back to the main topic of how, when there is no enforcement, there is a lack of drive at the executive management level of these organizations to do what is good enough. And I say good enough because so many of these organizations are lacking just what I would consider to be basic common sense standards. And too much of the time when I talk to them about various things, what they end up, you know, you get somebody inside the organization that goes, oh, it's totally fine. You know, it's totally fine. So their internal IT people are saying, oh yeah, it's totally fine. But these internal IT people are the same people who set up this level of gross incompetence. You know, head to tail. And executive management is not engaging in saying, well, you know, how much is it really going to cost for us to get an external audit? I mean, sometimes these things are as cheap as $2,000. I mean, more so on the high end, it might be 11 grand, you know, $11,000, $12,000 on a high end. You know, so I've even seen circumstances where when you have a conversation with executive management at an organization, you know, $50 million organization. You say, look, you know, that whole problem could be fixed for $500. They don't want to spend the $500, you know. And then my head explodes, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, like, so if executive management being told it's only going to cost $500 to close a major security gap refuses to spend the money simply because their internal IT, who created the problem to begin with, is saying, oh no, it's fine. There's nothing to see here. There's no problems. So executive management is so unmotivated that they don't even really want to know what they just want to trust internal IT. They don't want to verify, and they don't want to know what they don't know. Because I guess then they might be culpable for having to do something about it. So, as long as those sorts of situations continue to go on, when, as far as I'm concerned, the free market should have solved this problem a while ago. This is one of those circumstances where they're not solving it. So there does need to be some enforcement on this. And we've seen where what Germany has done, for example, has totally closed that gap. You just literally do not hear about breaches occurring in Germany. And the reason is because a few years ago, they put in regulation that mandated that every business get an audit and get a sign-off certification from a data privacy expert. And does that increase the cost of doing business? Yeah, it does. But I would argue that if organizations were already engaging in doing what is good enough, they're probably going to pass that certification assessment anyways. So the government can help by saying, you know, look, the cost of these assessments cannot exceed, you know, blah, 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 dollar amount based upon the size of the organization. You know, there should be some level of a sliding scale or something so that that way people aren't gouging. And the other thing that the government should not be doing is limiting, putting some sort of an artificial limit on the number of certified assessors, which you see happening in Mexico, right? I was talking about corruption earlier. And one of the problems that exists in Mexico is there is a set number of notaries for a particular geographic region in Mexico. And these titles are literally auctioned off to the highest bidder. And because there's a fixed number of notaries, the notarization services end up being exorbitantly cost prohibitive. And that is a problem. So that's, you know, you could actually make the argument of the same thing why the whole process of putting out, what do they call them, the number of taxi licenses. There's a problem with that, too, because it creates taxi rates of a particular amount because there's a lack of competition. There's a lack of service providers to really meet the demand. So there shouldn't be a limit. There should be, like any other certification process, there should be a process to go through that says, okay, this is what you're going to have to be qualified for in order to become a, you know, certified data auditor, data privacy auditor. That's fine. And we already have some of those standards in the cybersecurity industry. But without a level of enforcement, what my perception is that private business, by and large, is not going to do good enough. And until private business puts pressure on their suppliers, and the biggest offender, in my viewpoint, is actually point of sale vendors. There is not a single point of sale application that I can honestly point to and say that it is truly PCI compliant in every way. And I've talked about this whole topic before, and these point of sale software vendors are always telling the merchants that, oh yeah, we are PCI compliant, and when you use our software, you're PCI compliant. And that is just 100% bogus, because PCI DSS standards and compliance is way far beyond the simple transactions between the endpoint and whatever the merchant processing service is. And in fact, a lot of these software companies are just so grossly incompetent that even the data being transacted between their, you know, fancy little mobile devices and whatever their cloud server is not even encrypted. I mean, I saw this as recently as 2 days ago. I was literally looking at this supposedly, you know, fancy pants, high-end point of sale application, and I was looking at the actual network traffic that was leaving a tablet and going to their cloud server, and it was completely unencrypted. I was able to see 100% of the data inside of those packets because it wasn't encrypted. So that in itself right there is clearly not PCI compliant, Because at the very, very, very baseline of what PCI compliance is it is to encrypt the transactional data between the endpoint and the clearinghouse. So that clearinghouse is usually some sort of a cloud-hosted server. But in this case, that application was not even doing it. And when you bring this up to the point of sale software vendor, they don't care. They don't want to fix it. I've literally wasted hours and hours and hours, probably 50 hours of my time over the last 10 years, doing very highly technical write-ups and providing them to the point of sale application vendors so that they could specifically action these things. And what I find is years go by where they certainly had more than enough opportunity to correct the defects in their software, and nothing has changed. And so when I say that the merchants, they're not pressuring their vendors, the point of sale companies, to correct the applications, I'm serious, right? The merchants, they don't really have anything with any teeth to go back to the point of sale software companies and tell them to fix their broken stuff. What I'd like to see is an organization like the FTC do a very technical deep dive on every single one of these point of sale software platforms and force them to go through a compliance certification process. Really. And I mean, I would sign up for that. I think that would be great. And unfortunately, I think that sort of a process needs to exist. There needs to be a software vetting process. The number one breach vector that I see is truly just horrifically designed and poorly programmed software. I mean, I could tell you about medical applications that are still to this day not even remotely compliant with HIPAA standards from 2009. And when I call these software makers and talk to them about how and why their application is not even remotely close to being HIPAA compliant, again, they don't care. And the reason that these software manufacturers don't care is because the government is not coming down with a hammer on them and saying, guess what? You fix your product or we're going to fine you $1 million a month or whatever it needs to be. So unfortunately, I think that that's what it's going to take to fix this. There has to be some sort of an external force that causes leaders and organizations, including the software companies, to really decide to make this a priority. You know, there, and this problem exists extensively in the Internet of Things market space as well. I mean, I'd like to see a process where a product cannot be brought to market unless it goes through a level, some sort of a certification process to say, you know, we've looked at it and it's not going to be so obviously easily hackable that, you know, your baby monitor is going to be able to be used to spy on you in your house because your baby monitor was so poorly programmed that any 12th grader could have hacked it. You know, so if the companies themselves, if the manufacturers, so the software vendors, the Internet of Things vendors, are not choosing to make security a priority, and then consumers buy these things, or, you know, merchants buy them, or healthcare organizations buy them, these gaps are going to remain. This is really no different than it's perfectly legal to sell a healthcare organization a copy machine that does not have an encrypted hard drive. I would ask the question why, because the incremental price of the copy machine is only another $500, and that organization is going to have that copy machine for 5 to 7 years. So the incremental cost of another $500 over that time period is nothing. So if it takes an encrypted hard drive and a copy machine to have security compliance for the data that is printed through that copier or faxed through that copier or physically copied or scanned, then that $500 expenditure should just be standard operating procedure. But what you find in the industry is where the copy machine vendors are out there trying to get the sale. And they try to get the sale by making it appear cheap. And the way they're making it appear cheap is they're not including the encryption module for the copy machine. So as a result, unsuspecting healthcare providers just think that they need to buy a copy machine and they don't really understand the implications. And they're not even being given the option in many cases. They're not being told, well, you're going to have problems with HIPAA compliance if you don't have an encryption module for your copy machine. So this is where I think the problem needs to be solved. And I seem to be the only one talking about this. I don't hear about these topics on the general cybersecurity channels and posts and forums. I don't hear it amongst CISSPs. And there's so much advocacy being done with regards to compliance for the regulations that already exist, but I don't see an enforcement mechanism in place that's actually being effective for pretty much any of them. And therein lies the problem. So we have all these wonderful guidelines. We have all of these existing regulations, but the enforcement really isn't there. So where is Health and Human Services with regards to going to these supposed HIPAA compliant software manufacturers, and where is HHS vetting that software and saying, boy, that software is really not HIPAA compliant, therefore, we're going to give you 90 days or 180 days, whatever that time frame is, to fix your software. And if you don't fix it, then you're done. We're not going to allow you to service that software anymore. So I just see that the enforcement mechanism is grossly lacking at this point. And until that enforcement mechanism is in place, my concern is that there isn't going to be that drive and that impetus to fix anything. Because this whole process of having people like myself that are in the cybersecurity industry talking about it, bringing it up, bringing up specific details that are actionable and usable intelligence by whether it be the software manufacturers or business decision makers, it's not really making that big of a dent in the problem. And so there you have it. I mean, I think the only option at this point is enhanced enforcement. And I hate to say that because, again, I'm not that big of a fan of governmental regulations. But in this case, I'm not really sure what the other option is that's on the table. So I think we've tried for the last 20 years another approach. Well, the other topics I talked about, I'm going to have to talk about them on the next show, but I promise you I will talk about them. And I'll post some links with this podcast so that you can refer to those.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
From the WGTD Earths and Other Events calendar, Jane Kramer Foundation will have a free event at Roma Lodge in Racine October 19th from 6 to 8. The Jane Kramer Foundation gives information useful to women who have or are concerned about cancer. For more info, please visit janekramerfoundation.org.
Support comes from the Lake Geneva Symphony in concert Saturday evening, October 14th, performing Brahms' First Symphony and featuring virtuoso Frank Ullman performing Wieniawski's Violin Concerto No. 2. For tickets, visit lakegenevaorchestra.org.
On Saturday morning, October 14th at 11:15, join